Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where satisfaction is guaranteed. Since 1997, Noble Knight Games has been serving gamers' needs globally. They stock over 100,000 new and out-of-print board games, role-playing games, CCGs, minis, and war games. They have it all. Noble Knight Games always deliver what they promise. Speedy shipping coupled with excellent and friendly customer service make shopping here a no-brainer. You'll find discounted pricing on most imprint games and reasonable prices on out-of-print and rare items. With over 15 years in the business, they know how to package your order so it arrives safely anywhere in the world. Want to transform your old games into that new item you've had your eye on? Check out their trading and selling your games section. They provide the shipping labels, you box up your games, and that's it. Don't forget to sign up for their weekly email newsletter where you can discover new and rare finds. Visit them online at noblenight.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 91, and I have a very, very special guest for all of you. It's a recording that I've been looking forward to for a very long time. I have a listener-turned-guest, Mr. Aaron Boston, who is going to be coming on and talking about all sorts of cool ways that us as wargamers can give back. And Aaron, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Jonathan. And, yeah, I'm very impressed with the intro. You did that all live. All this time, I thought you, like, somehow set that all up. So I'm impressed.
Normally, when there's not a guest on the show, I'm here saying that, like, five or six times I sound like an idiot. I'm like, Wargaming Recon is like, and then I give, like, the wrong blurb for my other show, Geeks Explicitly, and I'm thinking, wait, no, is that what I normally say? I swear my wife probably thinks, oh, he's at it again. And I just go to her. You know, usually if there's a guest on, like, this is sad. It's really, and I shouldn't admit this publicly, but like, I'll rehearse my intro and be like, so what do I want to say? And then just say it over and over and over again.
Right, right.
But, it's funny because you would think this is episode 91 and you would think by now I would really have it down pat and I wouldn't have to rehearse it or write it down or say it five times, but I really do sometimes. It's awful.
Well, that actually sounded great, and that was your first try, and it sounded great. So you're getting the hang of it.
So for longtime listeners, you know the deal. We have a guest on, and they talk about all sorts of cool stuff. And for new listeners, well, we have a special guest on, and Aaron's going to talk about all sorts of cool stuff. The reason why Aaron's here on the show actually goes back to Aaron. Do you remember the first time was that you emailed me? It feel like it was a while ago, but maybe not that long.
I think it was right actually around Christmas break time.
Okay.
Or New Year's or something like that. I remember it was a 3-day weekend for me, from work. And, I had bought some paper terrain from Wargame Vault. And, I got one of those little things when I'm getting ready to check out. It's like, oh, you know, you bought this and this and this on your cart, you might be interested in checking out Wargaming Recon podcast, which is free to include. And I was like, oh, well, it's free, so I can't go wrong. I like Wargaming podcasts. I've never heard of this one before, so why not? And, listened to it, and it was something like episode 85 or something. And I was just like, wow, how did I not ever hear about this before? And I've listened to, you know, View from the Veranda and Meeples and Miniatures for 4 years now, and I've been a big fan of that. You know, variety of gaming podcasts. In fact, there was one point when I thought gaming podcasts were the only podcasts out there.
We had a conversation about that. You're like, who else would listen to about a podcast unless it was about gaming?
Right. 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 I've since discovered that there's so many other, podcasts out there on a variety of topics,
but none of them are as interesting as gaming ones. I'm sure.
Not that I've. Well, there actually is. I mean, I listen to a lot of Australian public radio podcasts, actually, that are actually shows, and they're available for free, you know, to international subscribers. So there's actually some good shows that I listen to about astronomy and, you know, current events and things like that that are interesting. I for whatever reason, I seem to be interested in Australia. It keeps coming up on my radar, and it seems like there's a lot of active Australian war gamers on a variety of gaming forums that I lurk around. So I just have this idea that Australia is this, like, just land of war gamers, you know, guys who go out and, you know, herd kangaroos around the outback and then drive their, you know, their Land Rover back into town and open a beer and sit down to enjoy a long, tabletop war game. So.
It sounds like a good life to me. I know from all my stats and stuff, of course, any podcaster, any blogger, as you know, because you're a blogger, you get all these stats and demographic information and stuff. And the primary group of listeners for Wargaming Recon are males ages 18 to 35. They tend to live in the United States, but then the UK, Canada, Australia, Germany, and now the Netherlands are other top regions. So there's something about this Anglo-centric kind of view with, I don't know how you explain Germany, but Germany, I'm all for, maybe because I'm German, I don't get it. But I love all the listeners and I love my German listeners, even though there's been some problems lately with technical side of the podcast for some of them. But it's interesting to me, like you're talking about Australia, and I've noticed for a long time there's been a significant following here of people from Australia who download episodes of the show. So there must be something to what you're thinking.
Maybe. And the Germans, aren't the Germans just like awesome game designers and gamers all around? Because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when people talk about Euro games, a lot of them are coming out of Germany.
That's true. There's a lot of great German games for all that Euro gaming board game kind of stuff out there.
I just have to say, one of my favorite games that I played, and I can't remember the name of it, but it involved, it was a German game, and we played it, a group of guys all together, and it was like one of those end of the night, you know, it's midnight, we just played, you know, Axis and Allies for 4 hours or something. And, we played this game that involved like clay and little wooden blocks and toothpicks. And there was a simple map. It was like a small city, a couple blocks of a city, and there's like little construction zones. And we didn't even read the rules because they were only in German. But this one guy knew enough German that he explained the rules to us. And the whole thing was that each player represents a construction crew, and each turn represents a month, and each month they can build like a little story, like a block of clay, and then build, like take a building site and build like two or three story buildings. And it has something like either two, three, or four. And that's how many stories your building has to be completed. And the whole thing was that, you had to, ideally, you're supposed to use a little wooden block and cover it in clay to make a little clay cube and then put it down on the map. And that represents a floor of your building. But of course, the wooden blocks represent like actual material, quality materials that you use. And any construction company that uses quality materials is going to actually not make as much money when they sell the building when it's completed. So the whole idea was to, when you make your little clay block behind your little screen, not actually use a wooden block, just use nothing but clay. But after everybody would put their little block up on their building site, one person was randomly selected to be the building inspector, and they take a toothpick and pick one building to inspect and slide that toothpick through the center of the building. And if it goes through, then clearly the building is unsafe because it wasn't built with quality materials and that building's like demolished. And anyway, then there was a rule for like bribery and stuff. But the whole thing was at the end, the player who had like the most wooden blocks still in his possession got so many points, and then how many completed buildings you had got so many points. It was actually a really fun game. It sounds it probably too complicated the way I tried to describe it. It's one of those games that when you play it, you're just like, this is actually a lot of fun. And I can't believe I'm in a room full of middle-aged men playing with clay. That's really what it came down to.
I'm a big fan of simulation kind of games. So it's, to me, it sounds pretty interesting. Even more so if the directions were in English. But, you know, you take what you get.
I actually created a home version of it, just using some colored clay, some wind blocks, and made my own little map. So I haven't played it in a number of years, but that's why I'm a little rusty on how exactly it worked, but but it was a lot of fun.
I want to back up for a minute to you were talking about how you discovered the show when you were on War Game Vault and you happened to see that it was like, oh, you might enjoy this and it's free. It was very exciting to me when you had originally told me that in your feedback, because at the time that I decided to try to get into War Game Vault, I thought, oh, no one's going to really be interested in this. People go on for their print-and-play, build in their print-and-play models. And who's going to go on to get a podcast? I mean, you want a podcast, you go on iTunes, you go to a podcast directory. This is just going to be a stupid thing for me to do, and maybe one person sometime will maybe listen to the show because of this. And then lo and behold, the thing that I thought was just going to be a waste of my time, I end up getting the email from you saying, well, I was on War Game Vault, and I go, yes, it worked.
It did. And the ironic thing about that was that, the first episode I listened to was about like inexpensive wargaming materials, and you actually brought up, and discussed at length, using paper terrain.
Yep.
You know, which is what I was really getting into. And I've actually, there's the whole part of me that is, I'm actually thinking about doing a complete paper wargame set up at Historicon this summer just to try to, demonstrate that, you know, paper using you. There's the. I should probably provide a bit of a. Now I'm playing with my computer and not paying attention.
Well, episode you're referring to, I think it was episode 84, which is not something I normally remember, but I think I called it Wargaming on the Cheap,
and that was it.
Part of the reason why I had done that was because I wanted to talk about how local libraries and libraries in general are a great resource, perhaps an undiscovered resource. War gamers, but then I also was really surprised because I was looking at those pesky stats again, and for some reason that one of the most common search terms for people to come to my blog is searching for paper terrain and paper models, or what I call print and play models, print and play terrain. And I was like, oh, well, I can talk about that, and I can talk about libraries, and I know I talked about a few other things which escapes me at the moment, but it was really interesting to be like, well, let me put this up there. And I think episode, whatever number it is probably one of the most popular ones on War Game Vault by number of downloads, which makes sense because, like you said, you've gone to War Game Vault for that kind of stuff to get the paper terrain, which is, they have a great selection of that in paper models. And so people who are interested in that are going to go ahead and probably want to listen to something about that. But then you had gone ahead in your email and you started talking about things that you do locally, where you get involved in the community and blend gaming and kind of like giving back. And that really intrigued me. So in a follow-up episode that I had done, episode 85, I think it was like my five goals for 2012 or 2013, was one of them was giving back because of some experiences that I had in 2012 giving back. And I really enjoyed all of the stuff that you covered in your email. And I don't know if you remember all the stuff that you wrote in it, but if not, I printed out your email. And I have some of the stuff that you wrote down. I just thought it was like really fascinating to see and read about all the things that you do locally, that on how you blend gaming and getting involved with your local community. And in your case, I believe it's your local library, isn't it?
Yes, well, I kind of have a cheat with this because it's, my wife is a children's librarian, and, we actually moved, to where we live now, for her job that she was offered here. And, part of the thing that, I don't know, somehow, she's always been kind of a gamer, but not like myself. She's been kind of more of a chess, player. And, you know, she likes board strategy games. And one of the things that we talked about, was, you know, doing something casual for the kids, that didn't involve video games, and trying to recreate kind of a little bit of like the gaming convention atmosphere. And I really didn't have any real good idea what I was doing. I was just kind of making stuff up. And she said, well, let's try it. So we actually set up a Saturday time slot that was like 3 hours and invited, you know, my wife put posters up and marketed it around the library. And we had, you know, dozen teenagers show up and, you know, we put out games like we were trying to aim for games other than the typical Monopoly, Connect Four kind of thing. So I think we had like Go Fish on the one scale. We had like Apples to Apples.
That's a great Forbidden game, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and it's a good like community game where you get, you know, five or six or seven kids all around a table and all interacting. So we did Forbidden Island pretty early, which has been a good cooperative game. And we've since added a lot of games that involve, more players and more kind of a cooperative aspect to it too. Rune Age actually has is a deck building card game, with a fantasy element, and it actually has a really good cooperative, scenario, which is actually really challenging if the players are really not trying to work together. What's kind of funny is that this kind of was, coming about, I guess about 3 years ago now, when my wife was reading a lot of literature in the library community about video gaming in libraries. And apparently a lot of libraries, in order to get kids to come into the library, were offering like video game night where they have, you know, an Xbox and a Wii and a Nintendo or what, I guess Wii is Nintendo, isn't it? I don't know my video games so well, but they'd have like a little lounge area or a room that's kind of off, because you don't normally think of kids, you know, playing video games and making a lot of noise in a library. But we actually have our gaming in a conference room, which is, I guess it's not like a conference center. It's just a large room that can hold maybe, you know, maximum is like 80 people, something like that. So it's a good sized room. We could set up a lot of folding tables, and for 20, 30 kids playing games at tables, it's a really good space. So anyway, she did get an Xbox with a Kinect and bought some very general games. There's the like Dance Central, I think, was one. There was a racing game and a pro sports game, and that was part of the whole thing. So her idea was to create kind of a gaming space that was video games, but hey, look, there's also some board games, there's some card games, there's some strategy games. And she kind of expected everybody to line up and want to play the Xbox. It's actually kind of gone the other way. I think the last couple times we've actually set up the Xbox, I think there was one time she didn't even bother, but a lot of times it's like when the Xbox gets used is towards the end of the session when like maybe a game has come to conclusion and the two or three players, you know, they have about 20 minutes before it's time to clean up. So they'll put the game away and then go over and play 20 minutes on the Xbox, the Dance Central game or something like that. But most of the time it remains untouched and it just kind of sits there in the corner unloved and nobody paying any attention to it. And we've had some kids bring in Risk and, Axis and Allies was the one I was kind of surprised by, especially when, you know, a 17-year-old walked through the door in January and said, "Hey, look, Aaron, I got this cool game for Christmas called Axis and Allies. Have you ever heard of this?" And I'm like, "Have I ever heard of that? Like when I was like 10 years old, I was playing that game, you know, or trying to get my parents to play that with me, and they were just like, oh, it's too confusing." So it's been a really good way to get kids. A lot of the kids that I don't want to say a lot, but there's a wide variety. But from my standpoint, there seems to be a lot of kids involved that are kids that don't have other things going on. Like they're maybe not really involved with their church youth group. Maybe they're not in band at school or in sports at school. And for me, I was one of those kids in junior high and high school. I was one of those kids that hung out in the school library and read books and played D&D. With other kids that hung out in the library and read books and played D&D. So, you know, for me, there's some points, you know, there's the whole background between the D&D nerd kind of stigma, but it kept me out of trouble. I got through all of high school. I never got drunk. I never, I wasn't involved in anyone's pregnancy. And I think to some credit, it was because I had something to do, and kind of distract me from, just the normal school stuff. And I think there's a little bit of that here. We have a couple of the teens that come that really do seem like they've got some issues going on in their lives, and gaming afternoon, Saturday gaming at the library is like this safe environment. My wife works really hard to, remind everyone like, hey, there's certain things we don't say here. There's certain things we don't make fun of here. This is a safe social environment. We're here to have some fun and socialize, and that's it. And it works pretty good. We have a lot of kids that come back, and my wife is, she's got a little bit of a social worker in her, but it's good to see some of the kids that have been coming for, a year or more now, where they seem like they're kind of coming out of their shell, and at least at the gaming events, they actually get really, really involved and interact with each other in a way that they probably wouldn't do if they were playing games in front of an Xbox or, hanging out at home. So
I think it's great that you've been able to do this and then reach out to some of these underserved populations where, I mean, this isn't your job. You're volunteering, and yeah, it's your wife's job, and it's great that you're able to do this with her and work with her on this. You have this cooperative aspect, and I'm sure it brings you both closer, but then it also helps not only bring the kids into the library, into this safe space, but it allows them to feel that they have value and they have worth. And who knows, maybe one of them's going to be the next great game designer or going to go on to do something amazing, all because of the work that you do here when you're giving of yourself and your time and your expertise to be going into this location and putting all this together and helping to mentor these kids, even if it's just for an hour or a whole afternoon or however long it is at each session. I think it's an example of a success that many places wish they could probably emulate.
Right. And I've been involved in the past with like, chess clubs with kids, for example, and just my wife and I try to focus on not necessarily supervising or running games so much as actually playing the games with the teens and trying to lead by example, so to speak, and trying to demonstrate like good sportsmanship and fair play and, just kind of proper social behavior with strangers in a public atmosphere. So, I mean, that's kind of the biggest thing, is not so much that we just set up these games and then, teens come in and we kind of supervise them, but she really tries to get the adult volunteers to just sit down and actually play the games with the kids and kind of demonstrate those good sportsmanship qualities of the kind of gamers you like to play against when you're, everybody's kind of been in those situations when they play a game and there's someone who's just kind of so pushy or so impatient or wants to win at all costs that it's just not fun for the rest of the group.
I think they're probably used to all week long being talked at, whether it's in school by teachers who are trying to get them to learn something or at home with other friends or maybe other family members. They're used to being spoken to, but not maybe really being involved with as a group. So that subliminal message that you guys are sending out by actually participating in the games is huge and is going to make a larger difference than if you said, well, don't do this and don't do that. And oh, this is what you need to do, because then it just becomes white noise for them. I would presume, just like the teacher on those Charlie Brown cartoons. It's all wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. Another thing that I'm trying to get organized to do, there is actually a after school program, that's a kind of a community effort. Apparently a number of years ago, the suicide rate in this area was pretty high among teenagers. And there was a group of concerned citizens who started an after school program to try to come up with things to, have kids, engaged in art classes or cooking or sewing classes that would, allow them to learn some skills and learn a sense of self-value. And I've gone to a couple of the events where they have a lot of art programs, and, you know, then they'll have an event where it's like, they kind of set up a gallery and they, you know, display all the kids' artwork and kind of make a nice little event out of it. And there seems to be, well, from my perspective, and it's nothing wrong with this, but there's a lot of like cooking classes and sewing classes and painting classes. And I'm kind of like, well, you know, if I was a 10-year-old boy, I wouldn't be very motivated to join any of these. But if there was like a model railroading class, I'd be all over that.
Definitely.
And so I thought, and I'm a relatively young, inexperienced, miniature painter. I've only been doing it for about 3-4 years now.
Your stuff looks good though.
Well, thank you. It's, it probably helps with my blurry, poor camera quality of photos. I actually had a friend, this is a bit of a side, but I had a friend who just went to like Adepticon, because he won a local painting contest, and, he was pretty pleased. I mean, his stuff looks great. I mean, he takes his painting very seriously, and he was blown away by the competition that beat him. But I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to that level or even if I want to. But yeah, I enjoy painting figures and I enjoy, you know, playing games with them on the table. And it's one of those things that I think I would have been really interested in when I was like 15, 16. And I just didn't know about that. I mean, this was, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s for me when I was a teen. And I'm sure, you know, like Games Workshop was around, but I was not in a area that, you know, was affected by that kind of gaming at all. I had no clue that such a thing existed. All I knew was like there was D&D miniatures. And that was about it. But I was thinking, there might be a cool way of doing like a 10-week class program for miniature painting and, you know, start off with the basics and, you know, give the kids, some figures and some paint and say, okay, first thing we're going to do is clean our figure, you know, class one. And then class two, you know, we're going to prime. And then class three, we're going to do base coating. And then class four, we're going to do, washing. And class five, we're going to do dry brushing. And then, you know, the last class, we're going to take everybody's figure and actually play a little skirmish miniature fantasy game or something. So I really want to do that. I just actually I kind of have a class program, sort of put together. I just actually need to clean it up and make it look really official and teacher-like and then submit it to the director of the program and get going with it. So
I can see a lot of kids being, I would be interested in that. And I mean, I'm 31 years old and I'd be like, sign me up.
Right, right.
No, that sounds fantastic. And I know also, way back you had talked about, I think you still do this, but I know you've been really busy, so you may not have been able to do this as much recently, but I think you had mentioned that you were running, wargaming tournaments, like every 3 months or so, every 4 months or something like that, every so often. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, I still am. But that's for like, you know, middle-aged men. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that's not actually for the kids.
Because I had read that and I'm thinking, so, and I was trying to piece together how, like, are these the same kids who are just getting into stuff and are they building their forces or are these people who already have stuff? And I was trying to connect all those dots and I knew I was missing something and it's probably just something that was there and I just didn't see it. I'm thinking, but, how are they doing this? And are you proxying? And how's it working? But it seemed something that would be really interesting.
Well, yeah, I got, as a means of getting more players to play some of the games I like. And for whatever reason, I'm really fascinated by naval games. Yeah, I grew up reading a lot of Horatio Hornblower novels. And then, you know, in college, I was reading Patrick O'Brien novels instead of, you know, my assigned reading for whatever lit class I was taking at the time. And, so I've been running mostly Dystopian Wars tournaments, at a local gaming store. And, you know, part of it is a way to get players, you know, come into the store and support the local gaming store that I love so much.
Do you want to give them a shout out?
Yeah, it's the Game Vault in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Awesome.
So, which is right down the street from where Historicon's going to be in July.
Yes, because they moved it. A lot of us up here are actually very saddened by that because it's that much further south for people to go.
Well, this year, actually, Historicon is doing, their theme is 1863, American Civil War, like the year of turning point, something like that. And I think it's worth the drive for people up north. Come down for Historicon, spend a little time. You know, Fredericksburg is the site of the big battle in the winter of 62, when the Federal Army crossed the Rappahannock and got themselves shot to pieces. Then there's Chancellorsville, is just a really just a couple miles down the road from the convention center. And then Spotsylvania is not much farther than that. If you really want to make a trek out, there's Brandy Station, Kelly's Ford. There was a lot of movement in this part of Virginia between the Army in Northern Virginia and the Army of the Potomac, in 62-63. So there's a lot to see here for a history buff. For me, I grew up on the West Coast and, for whatever reason, by the time I was 10 years old, I was fascinated by everything that had to do with the Civil War. When I did my, like, state report for fifth grade or whatever it was, like, I picked Pennsylvania because I thought Gettysburg was such a interesting battle that, that I wanted to adopt the whole state for it. I don't know why.
It's just, you mentioned state report in fifth grade, and I thought, well, I had to do it in fourth grade, but I thought, only up here in my area, we had to do like those state reports at like that age group. And, of course, like everyone wanted to do my home, was not my home state, but the state that I reside in, Massachusetts. I'm actually from Virginia. I was born down there, but, I ended up doing my, father's home state, the state of Kansas. And, it was interesting because that's actually how I met one of my childhood friends. But I think it's interesting that you picked your state because of your love of the American Civil War.
Yeah, and I was reading the Bruce Catton histories, and my teacher at one point said I should be counting double pages at least because the print was so small. But that's what I was fascinated by. So I'm finding I have a lot of seasonal allergies here now that I'm not used to, but I do enjoy like living in the center of a lot of history here that I was really fascinated by a kid. In fact, I'm starting to kind of get a little burned out on the Civil War.
Oh no.
So I have to like start building a 10 millimeter, Civil War army. You know, just before that passion goes away.
It's a good size to do it in. And there's some great rule sets out there that you can use, Fire in the Fairy, regimental rules. I know a lot of people enjoy. Great for Civil War. You can, 10 mil is perfect for that, actually.
Yeah, I'm really excited by the rule set that Two Fat Lardies came out with called They Couldn't Hit an Elephant.
Oh, you were talking about that.
It's a lower, I think it's, you know, kind of like a brigade level battle system, but I really like kind of the random nature of the activations. I've been playing a lot of muskets and tomahawks, and I just like the way that, you know, you get your troops in line formation and you intend to charge them against the enemy, and then you don't get any activations for the rest of the turn until the very end after your unit's been shot to pieces. And, you know, it's definitely got a random element to it that might not be the fairest sort of gaming system, but it makes for a much more interesting narrative, I think, on the tabletop.
Aaron, I want to share with you an email I had received from a listener in the UK. He wrote in, this was ages ago, actually. And I probably shouldn't say that because then that makes this not evergreen content, as I say. But he wrote in because on a previous episode, I was talking about you and I was sharing some of your feedback in a mailbag section. And his name is Richard Crawley, and he runs this awesome event. I think it's going to become an annual event. And he ran it last year called a Crisis Point game. It uses the Cold War Commander rules. I think they do like 6 mil models, I think it is. It's kind of like a, well, Cold War is what it is. But he wrote in because I was talking about giving back, and you had talked about giving back, and I mean, this is our giving back episode. But he wrote in and shared some really interesting experiences that I think you might enjoy, and I think listeners will enjoy, but he was sharing them with me because of you. And so I thought it was really cool how this feedback just it snowballs and gets more people involved, and then it just slingshots around like a hot potato, but in a good way, where everyone's like, oh, well, that sounds cool, and let me add something here, and this, let me add this here. But he wrote in and he said that last year's Crisis Point game raised some money for the British veterans charity, the Royal British Legion. This year, they are repeating the event with a couple of new charities. He said that three of them have lost loved ones to cancer in the past year, so half of any surplus they make is going to go to a cancer charity, and the other half is going to go to the Parents and Friends Association at the Bradfield Dungworth School, which is the place where they're holding the Crisis Point event. It's interesting with the timing that you and I are talking now, because when he first ran the event, it was April of last year, and we're recording this May of 2013, so it's roughly a year later. But then he also wanted to talk about, and this is one of the things I think is the most interesting, that I'm sure you're going to have some insight into, because I know how much you love rule design and game design and how to play with that. But he also wanted to share that he had this early participation game that he ran with the Society of 20th Century Wargamers to raise some money for a local hospital's special care baby unit, which I take it to be like, a neonatal critical care sort of thing. And he said that the game was based on Operation Sea Lion, which I'm sure listeners know is during World War II when the Nazis wanted to invade England, and of course it didn't work. But he said that they used the rapid fire rules, and they decided they were going to apply some fundraising elements to it. And I'm going to just burn right through this. It's a little long, but I'm going to burn right through it. And feel free to break in, Aaron, whenever you have a couple, some things that you want to say. But he had three elements that members of the public could involve themselves with, because they were running this actually at a local castle, which I think is one of those cool things that you can do when you're in the UK, because like here in America,
all right,
and it's like, let's go find the nearest castle. Well,
actually, I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool to like actually war game, like say the Battle of Chancellorsville on the actual battlefield side? I don't know, that might be a little,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I guess there's, my wife would think that's a little gruesome, but yeah, something like actually war gaming on actual sites. I found a scenario for Kelly's Ford, and I thought, you know what? I should get a couple of my gaming friends, and we'll just go out there one of these days and set up in a patch of grass, I don't know, on the battlefield, and set up some miniatures, play a war game. Who knows?
Listeners, I'm sure, know, because I talk about it all the time, of my love for the American War of Independence, Revolutionary War, and I'm all of like a 45 minute drive to Lexington and Concord, over the Boston Common for the massacre or whatever. It should go out with a bunch of guys to set up a table out there. And War Games Soldiers and Strategy, I think it was, but it could be War Games Illustrated, way back had an issue where they talked about wargaming the American Revolution, and then they had a scenario for the Battles of Lexington and Concord that you could use with the Black Powder rule set, which I am, of course, a huge fan of. So it could take that scenario, go with all our stuff, and set it up like on the, I don't know, on the common somewhere out there. I'm sure we'd be kicked out before we got everything set up. Excuse me, what are you doing over here?
Well, that actual living historian reenactors probably would think we're totally nuts. Like that we're not actually devoting this kind of energy into like reconstructing, you know, period authentic uniforms and everything. But
well, it's interesting because like the same amount of research and energy they put into that, I'm finding that at least myself, I'm putting that into learning about the battles, and I work in a library, but what I do is really unique in that I send out and I get material from all over the world, so I get a lot of stuff to learn about AWI and specific battles, and I'm getting, you know, primary documents, and of course up here there's an access to all that kind of stuff, but I've talked before about running events for TotalCon, and just getting all this source material to go over it. And source material for the Dead Hampton Revolution to be like, well, we got to do this and we got to do that. So I feel, to some degree, probably put an amount, the same amount of effort in that some of those living historians are probably doing.
Yeah, that's probably true. So actually, I am kind of interested in this letter because one of the things that I've been trying to wrap my head around is doing a fundraising charity event with some of the tournaments I've run for some of the local middle-aged war gamers that I like to hang out with. So I know I'm really interested in like the Food Machine tournaments that War Machine sponsors in the fall every year. I think it's I think they have another name for it, but the whole thing is that, you know, everybody brings canned food and uses it as purchase tokens for like extra brie rolls and things like that. So I'm really interested in doing that, and I feel like there's enough momentum with our local group that might be successful. So yeah, go ahead and read that letter from Richard.
So what Richard did is, I think it's ingenious. For Operation Sea Lion, for the rules that they used, they had three ways that the public could be involved. The first way is artillery, which I'll talk about in a second. The second is air support. And the third is chance cards. As anyone who's played Monopoly knows, chance cards are awesome or awful. And just the fact that they're both, I think, is fantastic and a lot of fun.
But right, right.
What they did with artillery was, Richard said that members of the public could call in artillery by throwing coins, like change, really, at a large map on the table. The higher the value of the coin, the larger the caliber of incoming artillery.
That's great. That's great. And of course that the coins are collected. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no,
that's like, a great idea.
Be like,
I love
oh, well,
that.
Here's a nickel and you get like a tiny puny gun. Well, here's my quarter. And you're like, ha ha, take that. And
right,
wherever
exactly.
The coin landed on the map was where the artillery hit. So you toss it or you flip it or whatever, and wherever it lands, that gets hit. And I'll talk about that in a second. But he said that it equaled a hit, and that one that he really enjoyed, and I'm sure the players did not, was that a Canadian tourist, because they were at a castle, which I think is awesome, but they were at this castle that a Canadian tourist threw a pound coin at the map, which counted as heavy artillery, because, I mean, it's a pound. And so the coin landed exactly where, you know, the Canadian wanted it, where it was aimed, which was the location of the German tank column's lead vehicle. That's a great spot, right? You disable the first tank, and chances are they're not going to be able to be moving anywhere pretty easily, right?
Right, right.
Well, I really hope the players of this game who had this impacted on them aren't listening right now, because they might not appreciate my laughing. But what happened was the coin slowly rolled backwards and stopped at the site of the Home Guard's only anti-tank gun, much to the chagrin of the British players, and blew it up. So here they are trying to take out the lead elements of the German tanks. And then like, yes, and then it's like, no. And it explodes gloriously. I don't know.
It turned into a little friendly fire after all. Yeah.
And, I mean, of all things for it to hit, it's not infantry. It's not, you know, something else. It's your only anti-tank gun and it goes boom.
Yeah. 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 Only with the random, like, flip of a coin, you know, rolling on across the ground, as opposed to, you know, dice and consulting a table. I love that. I love that whole kind of setup.
I could see this being used for all sorts of rule systems, all sorts of different conflicts, because almost as far back as you go, there's going to be some sort of artillery. Even if it's a catapult or a ballista or a scorpion or, you know, whatever. You go back to the Crusades, and you go back to cavemen, and there were slingshots, right? So you got something that you could do this with. And I love that audience, that public interaction, where they're like, well, sure, I'll donate whatever amount of coins it is, and yeah, I could see it being kind of very engaging, kind of like how I imagine gambling is. You're like, well, just one more coin, and oh, and I want to get that. The next thing you know is you raised like $5 in coins for your charity.
Well, and I love how it's got that direct audience participation aspect to it, though, too.
Yeah, that's something with a lot of wargaming charity sort of giving back things, which I'll talk about a little bit later with some of the stuff I'm doing, that it doesn't have that direct interaction. And I think that I think they got it spot on, but then they have even two other ways that they got the public to interact. So if the public didn't want to get involved with artillery, and why you wouldn't want to toss coins onto a map and see stuff blow up is beyond me. But in case you didn't want to, you could call in either the RAF or the Luftwaffe. And you did that by donating really to the Air Support Fund. So each penny that was in the fund gave the relevant commander, you know, whether if you gave to the RAF, it was the RAF got this or the Luftwaffe, they got it. But each penny gave the relevant commanders a 1% chance of successfully calling in air support. So if you donated a pound, there was a guarantee that a Hurricane or a Stuka, for example, would come onto the table. And then once the dice were rolled, that money came out of the relevant fund and then was given to the charity, whatever charity that they had. Whether the aircraft actually did anything or not. So you are making a donation, which is great, and then you're hoping that your donation is going to allow planes to appear on the table, and then hoping that they're actually going to do something. And so no matter what happens in-game, the charity still wins, but then you have that suspense happening. Will it or won't it? And you just don't know.
Right, right. Now, that's great.
I could even see this
being... It's giving me all kinds of ideas.
Well, can you imagine like that. With this, like, say, getting together with a bunch of your buddies and going to an event like this, and then each of you kicking in a penny, and so, like, say there's five of you, you're like, well, let's see if we get artillery, I'm focused on artillery. You want to see if aircraft come in. So you put a penny in, and you're like, that's 1%, but then if you get each of your buddies, next thing you know, you bump that up to 5%, 10%, 25% chance. So 1 in 4 that you're going to get a plane on. So I think it's a great way. You could do kind of like a crowdsource funding too, like Kickstarter, but better for charities.
Sure. And there's nothing that says that once one side starts losing the game that the audience can always switch back.
Exactly.
And support the other side.
People are fickle, generally, I think. And so you could say one hand donate to one side and think, well, they're doing too well. I want to give the other side a chance. And then you change over and start donating to the other. I think it's
exactly, exactly.
And then the third way that he said that they allow the public to get involved was through these chance cards. He said that members of the public could pay to draw a chance card from the deck. And some chance cards had neutral effects like, oh, it started to rain today. And that the fun ones, and I love that he uses the words fun ones, because I really love his sense of humor based on what he says, is that the fun ones asked the member of the public to choose the side that the card was going to be played on. And so he said, quote, sorry, Germans, this young lady tells me your reinforcements have been delayed by enemy bombing. You just don't know what's going to happen. It's great. But he said the problem with all of this was that being British and being members of the United Kingdom, and the fact that they were playing a scenario in which the bad Jerrys are invading England, they realized that the British public were biased in this scenario.
Right, right.
So
makes sense.
They had to adjust it so it could be fair to everyone. And I think it's great that they're like in the middle of the game, oh, wait a sec. They keep on giving to the RAF and they keep on attacking the Germans. We got to do something about that.
Yeah, I could see a American Civil War game in Virginia. Would definitely probably have a bias towards the Confederacy in a war game of that nature. It's actually kind of interesting. I've gone to a couple of reenactments, and there was one I went to for Spotsylvania last year, and there was about 80 or so living historians dressed up in blue, you know, and they had their artillery piece on the hill. And then across the field, you know, lines up the Confederate forces, and there must have been at least like 500, 600 guys. Like the Union forces were completely outnumbered by the reenactors dressed in gray. So I find that really amusing sometimes, but.
Well, it raises a valid point actually when you're, even if it's not a charitable event that you do, but when you're doing any of these tourneys where you could have some of this interaction that creates that uncertainty, you have to think about what your audience is, and you have to keep in mind where you're located too, so that you can hopefully, before the fact, deal with some of these unforeseen circumstances like a bias of the public getting involved towards a particular side and trying to, war's not an even thing. You hope you have the best advantage and your opponent's at the least advantage, but for gaming, that's boring and nobody would have fun that way. So you hope that you kind of make it at least an acceptable challenge where someone has the hope of perhaps someday maybe winning.
Well, and of course, there's the whole thing of just doing a kind of a generic scenario, too. I know listening to a recent View from the Veranda episode where they're talking about blue versus red and that kind of being a conventional, you know, generic. Maybe I'm wrong. Was that when Henry was on your show? I've made a reference that I've already forgotten where it came from. But he was talking about, I know it was Henry Hyde talking about, you know, blue versus red.
He was, on episode 90, he did mention that there's a chap he knows who, when he paints his models, he paints one army blue and one army red, which I think is very little wars of this individual. And after he said it, I thought, I should do that too. But then it made me think of the webcomic Red vs. Blue, which is that Halo, I think it is, red comic.
Right,
webcomic.
Yeah.
One other thing I just want to mention that Richard had wrote was that he said that he was interested by some feedback that you had given me regarding painting courses, like what you were talking about earlier in our chat tonight, because he said that they had a charity auction for that same parent-teacher association for that same school, and so he donated 3 one-hour painting lessons, and that at the time of his email to me, he said that he was going to shortly start teaching a local 11-year-old to paint his Space Marines, and it's a benefit for their local organization, but at the same time, he's mentoring this young person to get into all of this. A popular topic now, and I think a very important topic when we deal with wargaming and gaming in general, is the whole graying of the hobby, and everyone talks about this to death. But here's an example of something he's doing, and all the examples that you've been given about how to try to combat that and how you're trying to get younger individuals interested in all of this kind of stuff, which it can be a challenge.
Yes, and now I kind of kick myself a little bit because when about 5-6 years ago I was involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I was taking my little brother to the park to play frisbee golf, and I really didn't even consider the fact that I could have introduced him to wargaming and miniature painting. So yeah, that's great.
Well, I want us to talk about your blog, but before we do, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about some of the ways that I've given back last year and what I'm working on this year. And part of it's a plea for people to donate money. So I need to put out there that it's a little crass. I'm asking people if they are so able to make a donation, but I'll get to that in a second. Listeners probably recall, hopefully, that last year I participated in a really fun way that you could give back to charity and game at the same time. It's the Extra Life 24-hour Gameathon. I gamed for 24 hours nonstop to raise money for Boston Children's Hospital, and I gamed part of the time with Troll in the Corner owner and editor-in-chief Ben Gerber. We played all sorts of board games, and we played games with his kids and his wife and some friends, and then I gamed on my own. And I mean, 24 hours of nonstop gaming. You think, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, and it is. It takes a lot out of you because you got to factor into that 24 hours. You're not sleeping or anything.
Right.
You're gaming.
Now, I sponsored Craig Glant the last time that happened. So now that means the next time around, I'm going to have to sponsor Craig and you.
Well, that's very kind of you. It's really a great way to give back. And one thing I like is that some things that people do to give back, it's very focused on their own location. And there's really no way that you're able to give, but for it to benefit those in need in your area. But the Extra Life 24-hour Gameathon is so widespread that you're able to benefit hospitals in your area and groups in your area. So no matter really wherever you are, you're able to make a donation, or you could do it yourself and you're able to help out those near you, people who you might know who have a need. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I definitely like the kind of the whole idea of gaming beyond just you know, old men in back rooms hunched over gaming tables. So I definitely think it's a great way to get some public exposure for the hobby too. Definitely grab some attention.
And then this year I'm stealing a page out of Henry Hyde's book who of course he's the editor, new editor now of Miniature War Games magazine. And I want to start walking to raise money. Well, let me back up for a second. I have a little cousin, Gracie, and I've mentioned her on previous episodes, but she was born with cystic fibrosis. And on May 18th of 2013, I'm going to be walking in a 3-mile walk to raise money to benefit the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And I'm hoping that people who can and who are so willing will make donations. I've already raised, I think, like $135. I'm hoping to raise $200. And I'll have a link in the show notes to this episode, which you can get to by going to wargamingforums.com/WR91. And I'll have a link there, not only to that, but to all the stuff Aaron and I are talking about. But I'm, in my fundraising for this, I've been surprised by how prevalent it is, for cystic fibrosis to impact other people's lives, because almost to a person, everyone who's donated knows someone was best friend with someone or had a family member who had CF. And what many people don't realize, because most people, I think, don't know what CF is, it's a respiratory disease, but it's a death sentence is what it is. There's nobody who lives a long natural life who has CF. It shortens your lifespan, and you're lucky if you live into your early 30s with it. And unfortunately, that's the truth of the matter. But I know they're making, pun intended, great strides towards finding all sorts of different cures and working with drug companies and everyone to try to find ways to help individuals. So I'm hoping to be doing my part with all of this. And actually, I was talking with Jay Libby, who I don't know that I've ever mentioned here on the show before, but he's a game designer who lives up in Maine, and he goes to TotalCon. He's one of the industry guests, but he's doing a CF walk on the same day that I am, but he, of course, is doing it up in Maine. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. But then I'm also working on training to do this. My wife runs, and she's a runner, and she does a lot of 5Ks. So I'm training. I want to walk a 5K. I'm not a runner, and if you were to see me, you would realize I'm not a runner. But I want to train and walk for a 5K and independently raise money, probably for some sort of either Wounded Warrior Project or a military-focused charity. I know Henry uses something called Just Giving, which is this UK way that you can connect to a charity and give electronically, but I'm going to use the US version, which is called First Giving, and I'll have more details on that at a later time. But this is that disconnect, actually, that I was talking about earlier. This is how I want to give back, but the connection to gaming, other than the Extra Life thing, there's not much of one other than that I'm asking gamers to give of themselves. So that's why I really like what you've been doing, Aaron, and what Richard has been doing on that combination and integration with gaming.
Right, and widening the exposure beyond just other gamers. So, yeah, now I forget what it was called, Second Life?
Oh, I kept on doing that myself, too. I was like, oh,
what the charity event was.
Yeah, the
Extra
Life. Bad
me. I wasn't taking notes.
There's a quiz later. No, the Extra Life 24-hour game.
Extra Life, yes. Well, I mean, that's the only thing I know about that is because I listen to different gaming podcasts and work out on gaming forums. I mean, I don't know how much exposure that is getting among more non-gaming mainstream folks. I guess it is, it must some, because like video gaming counts for that too, doesn't it?
It does. It has a huge following on Reddit, which is where I know that it's gotten a lot of publicity.
Right. So that's cool. That definitely kind of gets some exposure for the hobby beyond, those that are already engaged in wasting their eyesight trying to paint tiny 10 millimeter, soldiers. So. That's really cool. It's definitely given me some ideas, about new ideas. Have to sit down and think how to implement some of those in my next tournament, maybe.
Well, I'm hoping that our conversation, or as meandering as and interesting as it was about giving back and things that your experiences giving back and all the other things that have been going on, I hope it's useful to listeners who might be interested in giving back. And I think a lot of gamers really care and want to give back to their communities in other areas and maybe really aren't sure how to. So even if this plants a seed of inspiration, I think it's a good thing. And I think it's a valuable thing, and I feel remiss that I've never talked about this more in depth before. And I mean, this is the 91st episode, and I started podcasting back in 2006. I think, don't quote me on it, but I think I was the very first gaming podcast in iTunes. And I never talked about it. And here I am all these years later, and I'm finally talking about it. So I feel bad about that, but hopefully it's of use to people. But I also think that your blog and what you're doing with your own fictional What If campaign is going to be of interest to people. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, I kind of feel a little disappointing that we just kind of talked about vague ideas and some maybe specific examples. We didn't have like a top five ways to give back, like you.
That's my other show.
So well with on your show, Jonathan. I feel like we almost need a top five of something.
We can do that in another episode.
Well, it'll be something to revisit. Maybe in some time, we'll come back and talk about some more definite ways that, that gamers can get involved in giving back. And,
I'd be surprised too if I don't receive some feedback from other individuals to talk about things that they've done or maybe ways that they're using these ideas that we've talked about and to talk about how they took that idea and ran with it. So that's more content for a future episode. And, hopefully many, many years worth of podcasting that I'll be doing, so there's always time to revisit a topic.
Well, sure, yeah. It kind of feels like we're, you know, exploring some new possibilities here. It's kind of more like a conversation than a how-to. So that's good. I'm glad I could be involved with this. As far as my blog, I started my blog just, I guess, to have a place to post pictures of some of the games I've played. And mostly cause I've got a couple friends on the West Coast that are like, hey, what are you doing? What are you up to? Put something up so we can see what you're doing. I was really involved with, map and counter, wargaming, for a number of years. So one of my old, wargaming opponents still likes to kind of give me a hard time about how now I'm painting, miniature soldiers, toy soldiers, instead of playing proper war games with those little, 3/4-inch cardboard hexes and with all the little numbers printed on them that are too small to read, and then having to use tweezers to move the stacks around on the little hex map.
Advanced war leader, I think is what you're talking about.
Right. So, but yeah, I have started a blog that I'm trying to, create kind of a general gaming interest, around miniature tabletop games, and at some point I'd like to put some useful information up about, getting involved with teams, getting involved with your library, getting involved with after school programs, the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. I was really impressed with when I was involved with that before I moved across the country. But yeah, my blog is at fancywars.wordpress.com.
There you go. I need to write it down.
It's only been around for a couple months. I actually started about a year and a half ago or more. I started a naval gaming blog, and I had another gaming friend of mine point out that naval tabletop gaming is probably just a little too obscure of a topic for a blog. And he's like, especially since you're playing, Muskets and Tomahawks now, and you're going to Historicon, and you're doing teen gaming at the library, you should, expand your horizon, so to speak. I've probably expanded them a little bit too far now. So I'm just kind of posting pictures of things that I've painted. And, we ran a El Dorado kind of a mini tournament. We only had 6 players show up, but we still had a lot of fun. Posted some pictures of that and tried to write up an interesting after action report. So that's all I'm doing with it right now, but hopefully I'll devote the time and energy into it to maybe actually create an online resource for sharing some of these ideas. And, I'm still pretty new at this. I mean, I've been doing helping my wife with the teen gaming at the library for a couple years now. But I think really when it comes down to it, it's not about being like a professional or really knowing what you're doing. Getting some kids to play games, it's not actually that hard. Volunteering to run a chess club at your local library, it takes a little bit of a time commitment. It's a, it's not really that hard to do. So I definitely encourage anyone out there with the time and the energy wanting to do something a little bit more. It's a great chance, I think, to, I don't have kids myself, which probably allows me to have that extra energy. It gives me some perspective on work and my life sometimes to actually get out and interact with some people that I wouldn't necessarily come across, in my everyday working life and social life. That's all I really have to say on that topic, I suppose, for now anyway.
I think you are selling yourself far too short.
Well, Jonathan, I have to say you do a really fine job at making your guests feel appreciated, I suppose, is one way of saying it. Thank you. So,
first of all, you're welcome, but it's completely deserved because we need to back up for a second. With your blog, it's not just, you know, this thing that's out there that has some of this and some of that. You're doing amazing stuff there. One of the things that you do, and you didn't even mention it, so I have to mention it. One of the things that you're doing that completely blows me away is your work on your own fictional war game campaign.
Unfortunately, that has been kind of waylaid by my painting challenges in the last 2 months because I've been so devoted to trying to get figures painted for different events that I haven't been writing that much, actually. And I my typewriter in the other room is collecting dust. That's my main creative writing tool is sitting down at a manual typewriter and then actually getting the text, you know, typed there onto the blog somehow. It's not making the jump so much. So yes, I have to actually credit you, Jonathan, and your podcast because, one of my, I had a sense of like something missing in my historical wargaming. I actually didn't really want to recreate historical battlefields on the tabletop. I was like, I want to create, like, when I got into playing Muskets and Tomahawks, it's like, I want to have like a scenario and a campaign that involves like some kind of English sort of guys in the forest and some French sort of guys and some Native American sort of guys, but they're not really like French and English and Native American. And I listened to your older episode with Henry Hyde, and he was talking about his magazine Battle Games and talking about the Imaginations, which was actually the first time I'd come across that whole concept. It was perfect though, because it reminded me when I was, you know, 13, 14 and drawing maps of, you know, forgotten continents and, creating, you know, cities and describing cultures and drawing up battle plans for these imaginary armies. And I'm like, you know, I still want to do that. it's a pretty geeky thing to want to do, but I really enjoy that. So, all right. Well, you inspire me to dust off some of my pages and see if I can't get more of them, posted on the blog and definitely make that a more regular theme there.
I think it's fascinating reading, and I have to give full credit to Henry Hyde because his Wars of the Faultenian Succession are one of the most engaging things I've ever read in a magazine. And the fact that he will perhaps, if enough people tell him they want to buy it, produce this not only as an ebook, but perhaps as an actual physical analog book, excites me beyond measure. But knowing that you then took that.
No, and I just have to say I'm with you on that. And it was, laziness on my part that as soon as I listened to that, last episode, where he was talking about that, and I was like, okay, I need to get online and send him an email like right now. And I was washing dishes when I was listening to the episode on my headphones, my player. So I was like, well, I'll do it after I'm done washing dishes. And then somehow like a week went by and I still haven't done it. So I need to get on that because, it's really easy to let that go. And then you notice 6 months later and he's like, well, nobody ever emailed me. So forget it. So I don't want to be that guy. Like, I don't want to be the reason he decides not to do it. I don't want to be like, he got 9 email responses and he wasn't even going to consider it until he got 10. And you know, well, I actually think he was talking about like 500 responses. Well, if I remember, it was a little bit more than 10. So, but I need to do my part and no definitely matter. Chime in because I definitely got into reading those, columns, in those early episode of Battle Games. I actually went and bought, a bunch of the old, one at a time, PDFs of those early magazines and really enjoyed. I really loved the kind of general, attitude, in a lot of those columns and the tone of that magazine where it's like, hey, this is really about having fun. And not about worrying too much of what year a certain regiment, participated in a certain campaign and what tint of, blue their epaulet were, anything like that. So.
No matter.
It comes back to you, Jonathan. I have to say, thank you for your show.
Well, you're welcome. But no matter how many people respond or don't respond to Henry, you can be sure that I am going to nag him incessantly until I at least get a copy of it. And I, as longtime listeners know, I nagged him and I nagged Atlantic Publishers ad nauseum about their views on digital licensing, or as I call it, subscriptions, which is not accurate. And they have since changed their mind, as anyone who's listened to episode 90 knows. And if you haven't, then you need to go listen to episode 90. But I think one of the other awesome things you're doing, besides the fact that you're doing this whole What If campaign, and the fact that you picked your own conflict, which I think is one of the cool things about this, is that everyone kind of picks a different conflict. Like Henry is doing like the Lace Wars kind of, and other individuals have tackled other aspects. I know there's someone who's doing the American Civil War, and I've taken AWI, but you've taken the 7 Years War, the French and Indian War, and you've made it your own, which is fantastic. It's fun to see everyone take something different, so it's kind of like we can experience it without doing all that extra work, which is great. I love how we can play off one another, but then, like you mentioned, you're doing all these painting challenges, which I got interested in them because of you saying to me, we're doing these contests over at manbattlestations.com, I believe it is, and we need people to enter, so I put something in, and then because of that, I started reading all your painting challenges and seeing all your pictures that you put in up for that kind of stuff, and I think that's fantastic. Far too many people, myself included, are always like, oh, we should paint this, and they have that inevitable mountain of lead that just grows and grows and grows, but you're actually doing something about it, which is unheard of, I think. So that's really encouraging.
Well, I think it makes a big difference when you actually have a goal. And one of the painting challenges I did was because I had a friend who was going to Adepticon, and you know, he had to get his piece done in, you know, 3 weeks, which was kind of insane that he set that kind of that time limit on it. But I was like, I'm going to try to get 14 figures painted in 14 days. And, you know, it inevitably didn't happen to the, I didn't finish that many characters, in the time frame, but it actually got me motivated. I mean, there were times when I came home from work and I'm like, all right, play Xbox or paint. Well, I need to paint because I have a deadline. So yeah, I need to do exactly the same thing with writing. So maybe that's what I need to do next, is actually have a writing challenge and say, you know, by the end of May, I need to have the complete first chapter for my Fancy Wars campaign written and printed on the blog. So yeah, maybe that's what I'll do. Just same idea.
Well, it's good practice too, because come November, it's National November Write Month or whatever they call it, where you have 30 days to write a novel, and then they publish whatever you write within that time span. If you, it's like 5,000 words. No, that's not right. X amount of words.
And it's 50,000 words.
There you go.
Yeah, NaNoWriMo. 50,000 words in 30 days is the idea.
Yep. So I'm challenging you for NaNoWriMo to do your imagination campaign.
Yeah, well, I want to do it sooner than that. I'm kind of piling on the projects because for HistoriCon in July, I've narrowed it down to 6 different games I want to run.
I think you're crazy.
And, and I realized that 2 of those are going to be tournaments, so I only have to do like demo game setups for those 2. But I have 4 other games that I want to like create. One of them is going to be Paper Armies. So that doesn't take nearly as much time. And actually I want to say on that topic, and I don't think I gave them a shout out, but there is a website called Junior General. I think it's juniorgeneral.org. And I believe it was put together by a teacher, and it's got a lot of great resources. It's kind of intended for teachers to run miniature war games for their students in the classroom. And, you know, basically there's some very simple wargaming rules on there, some very simple scenarios of actual historical battles. And then, there's paper figures that you can cut out and use to play the battles. There's even, there's a naval game that I love, in the Ironclads game, where the players actually design their own Ironclads and decide if they want to put more engines on their Ironclads to make it move more, or put more guns on it to give it more firepower, or put more armor on it to give it more protection. They have to keep within a certain value, range of values for all those things, or else the ship simply won't float. That's a great resource, I think, for doing something with wargaming for kids. And even if you have the figures, there's some good historical scenarios on there too. So that's actually something I want to do, at least one kid-friendly event at Historicon. Last year there were several, and I was really impressed by that, really inspired. You know, you get a lot of gamers that bring their 10-year-old sons, and you want to create opportunities for those kids to get really excited about playing some games and not worrying about, you know, breaking these fragile little figures.
Well, I think conventions are a great way to get the younger generation involved. TotalCon is a con that I go to. I've been a few years now, and it's very family friendly. And when I've run events there with some of my gaming buddies, we have a lot of teens who play in it, a lot of kids, and we love it. We encourage it. They may not play the way you hope, and things may not go exactly as planned, but the fact is, it's a success as long as they're having fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the key to that, and I've heard it repeated in several places, and I've learned, from experience and some poor choices, is make the game easy to learn, easy to play.
Yep.
And don't frustrate, new players. Make it fun, and you can do a lot. You can have a lot of fun with, getting there. I had some great experiences last year, at Historicon, and, went to Williamsburg Muster, earlier this spring. Those were like the first gaming conventions I'd ever been to, but, I learned some things just by participating in some games. And, you know, there are those games for the more serious gamers, which is great. And there was a game of Gnomewars at Williamsburg that had, great selection of miniatures. And every time I went by that game, there was, a dozen, kids and really seemed to be enjoying that. So, I think that's a big key trying to help develop the hobby, I guess, in that way, and just have some fun with it.
Aaron, I know you were at work early this morning, and so we should wind down the episode, but I have a few announcements that I think listeners and I think yourself included will be interested in, and some I mentioned last time, but one of them in particular I'm really excited about. The 100th episode is fast approaching, and if my math is correct based off of the release schedule of two episodes a month, I think the 100th episode should be coming out sometime in September, or at least I'm hoping it will be. But for the 100th episode, and I mentioned this last time, but for the 100th episode, I'm hoping to get a lot of you listeners, and Aaron, I'm hoping you're going to be involved with this as well, to share some of your best wargaming tips and wargaming products. Looking for 100 tips. I'm hoping that you're going to share your best games and rules and ways to make terrain and products and all that kind of stuff. And it's one of the things that's really cool about this is this is going to be 100. So I'm going to focus on what all of you give to me. And I will make up the difference if I have to, but I'm really hoping I won't have to make up much of a difference. And it's really easy for you to send this information. I talk about this in the credits all the time, but we have here on the show, we have a phone line that you can leave a voicemail at. It's 347-470-4263. So you can call and leave a message and try to leave your tips as like a sentence at a time, but I will play the voicemail, or I might have to edit it to fit into the show, but I'll play it so you'll be able to get your voice on air saying what you think is awesome about, a local game store, a product, or whatever it is. Of course, you can email me, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. You can send a message on Facebook. You can tweet me at cwfgamecast. So those are just some really cool ways, and like I said, please keep your tips brief, one sentence at a time. You can submit as many of them as you want, and I'm really excited about this and to send a lot of these out. But one of the cool things that I didn't get to mention before, and I can't remember if I mentioned this to you, Aaron, or if I mentioned it to another listener Patrick, but I was talking with the editor-in-chief of the Karansare Publishers, Jasper Lothois, who does, he used to be the editor of Ancient Warfare magazine, and he helped get War Games, Soldiers, and Strategy up and going. But I was telling him about all of this, and he wants me to coordinate with Guy Bowers, who's the editor of WSNS, and he said that he thinks there's a good chance that this little thing I'm doing here will be promoted in their email newsletter. So hopefully some of their audience will get involved with this. And like I said, Aaron, I'm hoping to get quite a few tips from you, because I think you have a lot in that head of yours.
Yeah, cool. Well, no, yeah, I definitely feel like I should contribute. It's definitely a bit of a challenge, considering that most of your lists have been like 5 items. So you're, but it's great. It's a good goal, and there's a good deal of time. September's a bit off. So yeah, I'll definitely spread the word. And I think if I can't myself supply very many tips, I know several really good painters, and a couple of, amateur game designers and, you know, a lot of players. And there's a lot of things that probably seem obvious to some people, but I think are probably worth including. You know, one of those tips about, just remember to have fun is a good tip to remember. And it seems obvious, but sometimes you can lose track of that.
I would say that's probably one of the most important ones. And as we get closer to, I'll have to set a deadline. And as we get closer to that, I'll have more details on stuff and what the deadline is and all that kind of stuff. But I'm really, really excited about this. I honestly, when I first started podcasting way back in 06, I don't think I ever really thought that, first of all, anyone would listen to the show. I never thought that I would ever have a guest on the show. And I never thought I would get anywhere near 100 episodes. So the fact that not only do people listen, which I am thankful for and amazed by at the same time, and that people have been guests on the show, and that now we're getting so much closer to that 100th episode, that's a milestone that I honestly, I never thought would ever come near. So I'm really looking forward to this. And I have a couple special things lined up that I'm not going to reveal just yet publicly, but a couple of things that I'm doing to hopefully give back to all of you, to thank everyone for being so supportive over the years. But then another announcement that I have to talk about is we've been talking about episode 90 when Henry Hyde was on. And unfortunately, there were some technical difficulties, and I don't think you encountered them, Aaron. But I know that some people in the Netherlands and myself and some people in Germany encountered this. If you're a mobile user and you listen to the show on your iOS device, your Apple device, like an iPhone, an iPad, anything like that, and you use the official Apple Podcast app, you kept on getting an error message saying you could not download the episode. And in fact, for some reason, the official Apple Podcast app doesn't like the show at all and won't allow you to download any episode, which really, I don't know why, but it's upsetting. And I have no idea why it's doing what it's doing. So I just have a few tips for mobile listeners to be able to listen to the show. You can stream the episode live from the show notes. So, for example, this episode, you want to go to wargamingforums.com/WR91. And then at the bottom, there's a play button. You click on it, it'll stream it live. You can download the file at that same location right beneath the play button in the show notes is a text that says download. It's kind of small to see, but you can click on that and save it onto your mobile device. Or, and this might be even the best way to get content so that you can listen to it on your mobile device or anywhere, you can do like you did, Aaron. You can go to War Game Vault and you can quote unquote buy the episodes. They're free and you can get them that way, and you can put the MP3s on to any device you like. And the cool thing about the War Game Vault method is, first of all, it doesn't cost you anything. And if I were to ever update an episode and do something with a file, I could then upload that to War Game Vault and it would let you know, oh, there's been a change here. So it makes it even easier for you to get any updated content without having to be like, oh, I got to go check back on the site to see if anything ever got updated or whatever. And of course, you can get it on iTunes and stuff. But for mobile users, I think these might be some of the better ways. And I listen to a lot of podcasts mobily on my Gen 1 iPad. I actually use a different app, which I have to recommend, because for some reason, like I said, the official Apple Podcast app hates the show, or the show hates it, and I don't know why. I'm looking into it, and it's beyond me, but I've been reaching out to other podcasters out there who are way smarter than I am when it comes to this kind of stuff, and from what I understand, they said that the way Apple is trying to talk to my host where the files are, that my host doesn't like it because Apple's doing something a bad way, and so my host is like, stupid Apple, what are you doing? And says no. And so, I mean, Apple's not going to change, my host isn't going to change, and I don't know how I could change it. So the only other way would be to use a different app. And I use an app that's I love. It's called Pocket Casts. It's $1.99 on the App Store, but they have a light version that's free. So if you don't want to pay anything, just get the light version. It lets you get all sorts of cool stuff, and you can listen to the podcast and everything. And like I said, it's a free app. And as far as I know, people who use Android devices have had no problems. So this is only for people like myself who use Apple devices. And I hate to say anything bad about Apple, but they've just have been doing all sorts of crappy stuff with their podcast app. So I would recommend not using it to listen to Wargaming Recon, as much as I hate to say that. And then I just have two, or maybe it's just one. You know, see, if I was a pro, I would know in advance, and I wouldn't be going back and forth. I have one other announcement, to me, and this is one actually that you picked up on, last time, Aaron. There's a new way that people can sponsor the podcast. I have, of course, a relationship with 127games.com, which I talked about in the credits, and I talked about at the top of the show in their little sponsor section, and I've had a relationship with, Bill Detmers for years. He's a fantastic guy. But that's a long-term thing with, like, a company, so to speak. And you might have a way, and I know, Aaron, that you do with me at Battle Stations, or at least from what you've talked about a little bit with me, that we're working out on the side. But perhaps, like, say you're not with the company, and you have, like, a convention that you're helping to organize, or a tournament or gaming event, or you're an independent publisher, or you're just a person who really likes the community and you want to promote them. Well, you can sponsor an individual episode of Wargaming Recon. It costs you $5, and your message can be no longer than a tweet worth of size. It's 140 characters. All you do is you give $5 to us, and we'll read your brief message on a single episode of the podcast. We have more information on our website. Again, show notes. You want to go to wargamingforums.com/WR91, and there'll be a link to that or more details exactly how this works. But you can have your brief message read on the show. I'll have it in the show notes. And so you can talk about whatever cool stuff that you have going on. And I have a brief example of what your message could be. So, for example, your message could be, in 140 characters, you can tell our audience your newest product, pending event, beautifully painted bids, latest deal, or contest. It's easy. So see how much information you can convey in 140 characters, and all it costs you is $5 for a single episode. So those are all of my announcements, and well, like I said, Aaron, I'm hoping to get quite a few tips from you and all sorts of other listeners out there, and we have all sorts of stuff in this episode. But before we wind down, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you, and where they can find you online?
Well, there's my blog, fancywars.wordpress.com. They can always leave a comment, or I'm not sure how that works, really. There's always my email too is actually maddrb@yahoo.com. And that's about it. I don't do anything really fancy. My line of work has nothing to do with my hobby, so that I'm not involved in publishing or game publishing and anything like that. So I actually just wanted to say, Jonathan, too, that it's been great being on the show. I'm glad you've persevered through the years. I've certainly come across interesting blogs or interesting podcasts, only to realize that they've been basically out of print for a long time and have no sign of coming back. So it definitely was cool to find Wargaming Recon and realize that not only did it have a lot of old episodes that I could go back and listen to, but there were new episodes on the way. So that was very exciting. So it was really cool to be a part of this. And I want to thank you for keeping on doing this, and it's refreshing. It's kind of cool to realize that you're not kind of the only one in your room painting figures and wishing you were playing more games. So thinking about all the different aspects of that. So now it's thank you, Jonathan, for keeping up with the show and trying to keep to a regular release schedule. That's a big key, and just keeping on with it and not letting it totally fall apart and become just an old website that's been neglected and forgotten. Oh. So thanks.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. I appreciate it. I really do. But I'm just this guy who sits in a room talking to a microphone, pretending it's a person. There's all these other wonderful podcasts out there and wonderful blogs that, in my opinion, are much better than anything I have ever done. And I just think it's great that people are very welcoming and supportive, no matter what kind of content you're putting out there, that they're very encouraging. And I think it's because of listeners like you, Aaron, who really care about not just Wargaming Recon, but they care about the hobby. They care about the entire hobby. And they want to help out one another and support one another and encourage people to stay involved and keep and find their passion and just kind of move forward with it. And I think that is very encouraging, and I think it's very exciting and supportive and just really interesting. And I mean, we've talked about some of the other great podcasts out there, View from the Veranda and Meeples and Miniatures. And I mean, there's the Dice Tower, which of course many people know about. And the D6 generation has all sorts of stuff. I can't believe I'm forgetting WWPD does all sorts of great Flames of War content. And just tons of wonderful podcasts and professional individuals out there. But I think there's a community for everyone. And I think, I honestly believe there's a podcast for every community. And, I just like to try to get people together and just get people engaged in talking about stuff. And one of my favorite things, and it takes more time than it probably should, but one of my favorite things is coming up with content to put on our Facebook page. I try to have something new and hopefully interesting every single day of the week, which is, it's a challenge, but it's cool to find a cool picture and put it up there and talk about what everyone else is doing. Because I think it's much more interesting to talk about what you're doing, Aaron. Let's talk about what, like Dean Emerson, who, for example, got the coveted helm at HuzzaCon recently. What everyone else is doing, I think, is far more interesting than what I'm doing. So I'd rather talk about what all of you are doing than my mundane existence. But I just like having the chance to talk, and I appreciate that all of you welcome me into your homes and your lives every time there's a new episode out there.
Amen. Thanks for having me on again, Jonathan.
Well, Aaron, it has been a pleasure having you on. And like I said at the top of the show, I had been looking forward to this for a long time. And when I had first started receiving your emails, I think at the time you probably were like, oh, they're long. Is this going to put them off? But I looked forward to getting each and every one of them, and I devoured them and read them again and again and again. I was like, oh, this is so cool. What are you doing down there? And this is really, really interesting. And
I honestly didn't expect to get any kind of response. If anything, I figured I'd get a response that says like, oh yeah, thanks for listening. So our next episode is coming out next week, blah, blah, blah. So no, that's cool that you responded in kind though. So
I really enjoy chatting with you. And I have to say, you have a great voice for podcasting, and you should really consider doing something. Not that you have the time, but doing something, on your own to get something out there. Put that in the back of your mind.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Well, thank you again. And as always, longtime listeners know, at this point, we have our usual credits and the promos for all the other shows on the Troll in the Corner podcast network, because we are a proud member of TCPN. And if you love Wargaming Recon, chances are you're going to like some of the other shows on the network. And at the very least, I hope you listen to my other show, Geeks Explicitly, that comes out every week on Thursday mornings. I tell you, it's a challenge getting that out, but it's a lot of fun too. Thank you all for listening, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to Aaron and me talk about all sorts of fun and interesting things this time around. And of course, you know the drill. As always, keep on gaming! I think that's a wrap.
Yeah, well, like that one show that is actually in the credits of every episode of Wargaming Recon, now I can't remember, GamerTunes? Is that it?
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Yeah, and you were saying I should take that down, but the thing is, Jonathan, is you have it in the credits of every episode.
Oh no!
for Geeks Explicitly and for Wargaming Recon. So if you don't want people to listen to it, then you need to stop advertising it.
I really, there's two episodes on there, and I keep on wondering why, like, people are downloading it. I'm thinking, there's two episodes, there's nothing there.
Well, I know, but you know what? I went to find it because you mentioned it at the end of your episode, of one of your episodes. I'm like, you know what? I should check that out. And then I was really disappointed that there's only two episodes, and the last one was, you know, more than a year old.
Yeah,
so.
I ended up merging that with Geeks Explicitly, and that's why an episode of GE has the video game music episode, which took me like 4 hours to put together, but I decided I was just going to blend music into that. And I hope you know, Aaron, that this is going to end up at the end of the episode as a little bit of bloopers, because people love this kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, on the other hand, I just have to say is that...
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
Hi, this is Tristan.
And this is Ben.
And this is Growing Geeks, a podcast where we talk about parenting as geeks
and use our skills to raise the next generation of awesome people.
We all started out as a ball of lightning. Ammonium chlorine, and somewhere in between we'll rule the world. Yeah, somewhere in between we'll rule the world. We're gonna go down, gonna go down slow. Gonna go down where the flowers grow. Down, down, down where a meatball.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.